Hello and welcome to the Paddle School Podcast. Your host and paddle coach, Sandy, here. Each episode, I will share with you my paddle coaching experience, bringing you top tips, latest news from around the world, and interviewing some of the leaders in the industry, and all to help you play your best paddle. So let's not waste any more time, get comfortable, and enjoy the episode. So our first guest on the show is Tom Murray. Now, he started the British Paddle Federation many moons ago, and now he's head of LTA Paddle. So we're going to talk about how he started the federation in the beginning, what clubs can do to introduce paddle and why it's so beneficial to do that, and where the federation are planning on going in the future. So let's get started with the interview. Okay, Tom. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. This is the first podcast that we're doing with the Paddle School. And I just thought we'd kick it off with a bit about your background. Now, I know you played college tennis like myself. So how did you actually get started in paddle?
Well, I moved to Spain at a young age to be a tennis player. I was probably 12 years old when my parents sort of sent me over to a tennis school in Valencia, of all places. And it wasn't until years later when I discovered paddle, but I didn't actually start playing until several years later. I would come back to Spain each summer after being at college in the States on a tennis scholarship. Every summer I'd come back, all of my old tennis friends were now playing paddle. And when I first saw it, I didn't think that much of it, really. You know, I think any alternative to tennis, a lot of us tennis players that are potentially kind of stuck in our ways think that, you know, any alternative isn't worthwhile and we don't even want to try it. But like I say, all of my friends were now playing paddle, so I was kind of almost forced into it at the beginning. But after playing, you know, two or three times, I quickly saw why everyone was playing it and how addictive it is.
At that point, are you still in Spain or have you moved back to the UK?
When I eventually had to get a real job, I ended up in banking of all things, and I was transferred back to Spain. I started my banking career in London, and because I spoke Spanish, having grown up in Spain, I was moved back fairly quickly. And so yeah, I just sort of, you know, gradually started playing more and more paddle away from my day job. Like I said before, no one was kind of playing tennis if you were an ex-tennis player. I suppose, you know, many years battling it out on court and tournaments, so much travel. So paddle was kind of a second opportunity for a lot of us.
Obviously, you went to work in Spain and then you at some point moved back to the UK and then must have thought, well, there's nothing going on from a paddle perspective here. Did you kind of make that decision to start the federation immediately, or was you kind of playing in London for a little while? Or,
well, interesting story. I couldn't believe that it hadn't taken off in the UK. So, you know, I was playing a lot by this time in Spain. And I gradually saw it just booming in all the tennis clubs. Everyone was now playing paddle. But it wasn't crossing borders. So, I mean, I'm talking, like I said before, 2011, 2012. No one was playing in other countries. So I took it upon myself to quit my day job. And I raised a bit of money from sort of, you know, family, friends, a few ex-clients from the bank. And along with a business partner, we just ventured into this and stumbled along upon a facility in London in Canary Wharf. And we opened the first, you know, indoor paddle club in the UK.
And so obviously at that point, the federation kind of wasn't really even a consideration. You just kind of started with the club, set the courts up and wanted to see if that model would work.
Yeah, we there wasn't really a federation back then, although there was a group of British expats based in Marbella that were trying to promote paddle in the UK, but obviously being, you know, in Spain wasn't that easy. I think they mainly formed the existing federation just so they could enter a team into the world championships and things. So we thought it was required to start a governing body, mainly because we were struggling to have conversations with local council, and our, you know, our plan upon setting up the first club was to kind of do what I think everyone's dream is to open a chain of clubs across the country. And we quickly found that that wasn't going to be that viable, because the first club was, you know, being, you know, taking its toll on us and financially absorbing a lot of our resources. We realized that you need to make that first club work before you can even consider opening a second club. But like I said, yeah, we struggled to speak with their local council. You know, we wanted to get schools coming along to try the sport. And because the sport didn't exist on paper, the government was saying, well, there's no acting governing body. You know, you need to tick a lot of boxes before you can, you know, build a sport, increase participation. So we just, yeah, ventured into it and started a governing body without really much knowledge.
I bet that was quite a steep learning curve there, trying to do that at the same time as running the Canary Wharf Club. So looking at the Canary Wharf Club, obviously now that club is shut down. Is that, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe 5 years ago or 6 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, 2012 we opened, or just before. And we actively did it for about a year and a half before we sold our shares, because we wanted to move on and open other clubs. So we thought, you know, it was best to kind of divide our resources. And that was the decision we made at the time. Unfortunately, the club closed, like you've just said, because we were on a rolling 6 month contract, and there's now a skyscraper in its place.
Was it a good, I obviously never went, was it a good club? Were you kind of happy with the location and the demographic there?
In all honesty, the location couldn't have been better. I mean, we were, you know, a stone's throw away from all the banks. So a lot of corporate clientele would come along and play. And we were pretty much breaking even after just 6 months of being open. We probably knew every Spaniard in the city by that time. And like I said, yeah, we did it for about a year and a half, and then another business partner took it over and continued for another year and a half before they were forced to close. And yeah, 80%, 90% almost were Spanish clientele. So it was a really interesting few years of my life.
Yeah. And so kind of rolling on 5 or 6 years now, obviously recently the British Paddle, which was the previous federation, has now come under the umbrella of the LTA, so the LTA Paddle. And as you know, and I'm just kind of explaining for those listening, that either tennis federations take paddle kind of under their umbrella, or some countries like Sweden, for example, have a separate paddle federation that is kind of driving the sport on. Now, was there a decision to go with the federation from a sport perspective, or did it just kind of make sense at the time?
Well, it was, you know, sort of a strategic move to partner up with the LTA. But I'll give you a bit of background. It's very sort of relevant to how we came to make that decision in the end. We were, like I say, building a sport from scratch and trying to tick a lot of boxes that Sport England and the UK sporting councils had outlined for us. So it required a minimum amount of courts in the country, a minimum amount of players, and increasing participation year on year. Coaches, a workforce, and you also had to be financially viable. You had to prove the reason you were financially viable, so whether it was being backed by sponsors or you could create a membership structure. So we ventured into creating a membership structure, but we were never able to sort of, you know, hit the minimum requirements required by Sport England in order to classify the sport. We started very slowly. We had 50 members in the first year. The circuit of tournaments helped, ranking points and getting people kind of engaged into the sport allowed us to keep increasing that number year on year. You know, the second year, we probably had 150 members, then 250. It was a kind of, you know, a slow climb from building that sport from scratch.
So it's also worth saying that actually at that point, there was only really two or three of you in the office. So you were kind of doing all the work of this federation, trying to hit these targets, trying to kind of develop the game. And really, it was almost, it was voluntary, and you didn't really have the staff to kind of help you do it. That must have been another kind of real benefit of joining forces with the LTA, is the resources and the staff.
Yeah, we were all sort of combining this with our day jobs. I was, you know, working in marketing after being involved with that first paddle club in Canary Wharf. There were a few others that were started to help in those early days, namely Peter Van and Tim Edwards. We were all doing it voluntarily. Like I said, and you know, once membership's built up, we were able to hire a secretary to kind of take care of all the admin, and with the hope that things would then increase. But yeah, it was a real struggle, and that ultimately was one of the reasons we were looking to partner with another governing body, namely the LTA. But we were considering, you know, squash and racquetball, badminton. Sport England actually had recommended that we try and partner with an existing governing body.
So obviously now with the LTA, that's something that is, you know, gives a lot of hope for the sport in the future. And having worked with you on a few of the projects to do with the juniors and the coach education and things like that, I know that people have the expectation that there will be almost instantaneous results. And I know that, you know, you're going through a kind of initiation period or trying to align with the LTA. Out of interest, and you might not have a specific answer for this, but how long do you see until there'll be a kind of big impact in the sport, do you think?
Yeah, I do have a specific answer, to be honest. There is a plan behind everything that's occurred. When we initially announced aligning or merging with the LTA, the first plan or part of the strategic plan is to integrate everything that we've created to date into each department of the LTA. So whether that's our competition structure, that in our last year had over 30 tournaments and rankings that were manually being managed, then our coaching courses that need to align to the LTA's coaching pathway. Lots of different areas, including, you know, writing the rules, regulations for tournaments as well, need to be integrated into the LTA. And as you can imagine, it doesn't happen straight away. There's a lot to consider. But at the same time, we identified that it was the perfect time to integrate with the LTA because a lot of changes were happening. So we've anticipated that, you know, the whole year of 2020, we will use this time to fully integrate. And we've got a development plan which will be kicking off from 2021. And that will be a full 3-year plan identifying how we can primarily increase the existing infrastructure, i.e. increasing the amount of courts in Great Britain. That there's, you know, when we first integrated, there's only 60 paddle courts throughout GB. So we've got a long way to go to match other countries. You know, you mentioned Sweden, but France and Italy, you know, they've got over 800 courts, and they've done that in a very short period of time. They've taken it from where we are now in just, you know, 3 to 5 years, they've managed to achieve those numbers.
I mean, we've seen a little bit of traction with the paddle. I can kind of think of a few clubs, and they're putting in one or two paddle to almost complement their tennis. It might also be worth us covering, you know, the benefit to a tennis club of adding paddle. And I mean, we can even use examples like, you know, for example, Middlesbrough, where they've put in two covered paddle. And you can see that it's really helped the tennis side of things as well. What would you say the kind of major benefits for a tennis club are to adding paddle courts?
I really believe that it really is a solution for venues that might be struggling structurally. So, you know, using Spain as a prime example, a lot of tennis clubs that might have been struggling during the credit crisis, early 2000s, they looked at paddlers as a real solution to tick a lot of boxes, to retain their existing membership, but also attract new members that might not necessarily play tennis. Like a tennis club might add a gym to attract new members. Tennis clubs in Spain were adding paddle courts. And with a real, in a short period of time, suddenly there were 8 to 20 paddle courts at tennis clubs, which is overwhelming. A lot of them were getting rid of some tennis courts to replace them with paddle. So, I'm not saying that that's the thing to do, replace tennis courts. There's no way, and a lot of tennis clubs wouldn't even consider that. But a lot of tennis clubs do have derelict space, and a paddle court is so small compared to a tennis court. I mean, if you twist it the other way, you can potentially fit 3 paddle courts on 1 tennis court if you include the surrounding areas. So, if you're able to maximize space, you're able to produce a new revenue stream. If you can introduce, pay and play court bookings, for example. And, it's the perfect solution, like I said, for retaining and attracting audiences.
And I think a big thing, and I'm sure you'll agree with me here, is kind of considering paddle as a complementary sport to tennis. And I know as a coach, that's something that I have a lot. It's a discussion that people say, paddle is bad for my tennis. And they also view that at the club that, if they introduce paddle, then they might lose tennis members. But really, you're able to kind of play both of them, and they both feed off each other. And you'll get players going from paddle to tennis and tennis to paddle. So I think that once the UK kind of accept that mentality that they can work together, I think that, the sport will really grow. Because after all, Spain is producing top paddle players and top tennis players. So they obviously don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've got to look at the big picture straight away, which is, paddle courts are popping up in tennis clubs throughout Europe. There's now 21 governing bodies throughout Europe, tennis governing bodies that now govern paddle. And it's primarily been because paddle courts are now at tennis venues. So, for obvious reasons, this has happened. And both sports complement each other. It's not like squash, which is potentially really risky compared to tennis. The same goes for badminton. Paddle, the dynamics, it's more slightly more dynamic because of the walls, but in terms of the technique, it's very similar to tennis. And like I said, it complements your tennis skills. So it really is a no-brainer. Especially if paddle is slightly easier to pick up, it's a great stepping stone for someone to get into tennis later on.
If a tennis club in the UK is interested in getting paddle courts, whether it's, obviously to use the interest-free loan that the LTA provide, or they just want to kind of add that extra sport to their facility, how would they go about that?
I mean, it's a real game changer. The fact that we're able to tap into the LTA's resources and venues have the option to apply for an interest-free loan. I say it's a game changer because there's been no financing previously for paddle in this country. And it's, the first governing body to actually do so. I know in France that they do offer loans, but none are interest-free. A lot of tennis clubs might be looking to add just 1, 2, or 3 paddle courts. And in the grand scheme of things, a lot of people might think we need bigger facilities. But as an initial step to increasing infrastructure, it's all about growing the amount of courts. So any number of courts is going to help that. Now, if we're to follow in the footsteps of what's happened in France and Italy, like I said before, great examples for us to use, being that they are also governed now by a tennis federation, is that the organic growth is going to be a major part of our development. So, clubs adding 1, 2, or 3 courts can easily tap into one of these interest-free loans, which is currently capped at £250,000. So, sufficient to add 3 courts, even with a roof cover.
Yeah, I mean, that's some really great support, isn't it, to be honest, that they that the LTA would be able to provide that. I mean, I know the clubs that, I used to play for in France, now I go back and they've added 16 paddle courts, and that, you know, they're not having this funding. So they took a bit of a risk, and it's paid off for them because those courts, you know, are now full. So it should be feasible to think that clubs in the UK can get that assistance with the loan and also put in, you know, two or three as a kind of dipping their toe in the water almost, and see, you know, how the sport would develop then. I think it's, you know, a good opportunity. So just going back to the question of how would they do that? Do they contact you directly at the LTA, or is there, you know, how does that work if a club is interested?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of support and guidance in place from a lot of area sort of, you know, participation managers. But I mean, all the information's on the website. It's really straightforward to apply for one of the loans or just to get more information if you're considering paddle.
Just to finish off, I thought I would ask if you could give one piece of advice to someone that wants to build a club based on your experience from Canary Wharf, what would that piece of advice be?
I would say you should look to focus a project using multiple revenue streams. So rather than relying on, you know, paddle court bookings, so bear in mind it's obviously a minority sport that we're all trying to develop here. If you're creating a venue or a project that's only got that one revenue stream, things are going to be a huge challenge. So I would always focus a business model around the bar, restaurant, that social hub, or even other sports that might go side by side with paddle, so i.e. tennis or indoor football, whatever it might be. There's obviously lots of variables when you're setting up a club, whether it's, you know, obtaining a sports license, business rates that might go, you know, with a warehouse. And a lot of us are struggling to find, you know, specific venues. So I would really firstly try and break it down, establish a really solid and sustainable business model with, like I said, multiple revenue streams, and kind of go from there. Now that the sport is undertaken by the LTA, it's a lot easier now to have conversations with local council. So presenting a project should be a lot more straightforward now. And, you know, obviously I'm happy to advise and endorse any projects or make introductions to local council. Because obviously we need more facilities. So we need to encourage people and, you know, small groups to get out there and start creating clubs.
I think that's also a good point, is to, if someone is really genuinely interested about kind of adding paddle to their club, it's worth going to Spain and having a look at how they do it, because, you know, the different streams there are kind of really obvious. You know, they'll have exhibitions going at the same time as kind of ladies clinics, or that's, you know, social evenings. And I mean, it all works together well because there's so much going on and there's so much for families or adults to kind of participate in.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of offerings, that's for sure. You know, what one example I look at quite often is how they're doing things in Sweden, which, you know, it's completely boomed in the last, you know, just 18 months alone. So they're definitely doing something right. So we need to use them as a bit of a reference here. You know, how have they been able to achieve indoor facilities with, you know, close to 20 or 22 courts, I think, in the last one. You know, so, and that's one of my main focus points in our development plan, which will be starting from next year. It's to support companies that do want to come to the UK market and open bigger clubs. You know, we can't just rely on the organic growth from tennis clubs. We need to encourage dedicated paddle venues, you know, larger paddle venues that can almost become, you know, regional and national hubs for the sport to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tom, I just want to say thank you very much for your time today and some, you know, really detailed answers. Where can people kind of find more about yourself or about LTA Paddle?
Yeah, I mean, on social media, we try and, you know, keep as much momentum going with ongoing content as possible. You know, and myself and the team at the LTA are obviously behind those channels. So that's LTA Paddle is the handle on most of the main social media platforms. But you know, anyone can also contact me directly. I don't, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you very much. And hopefully I'll see you on court soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you for listening. And I think you'll agree that it was interesting to hear how the British Padel Federation started. And it would be good to check back with them in a year's time to see how well it's progressed. I'll put all of the links for the LTA Padel in the description. And I know that Tom checks those himself regularly if you want to get in touch with him. Or you're more than welcome to contact me if you've got any questions. Now, this is our first episode, so please subscribe. Please leave us a review if you enjoyed it. And I hope you'll join us for the next session.